And I just hope we've created something. Well, I know we've created something that our fans are happy with. I just hope we've created something that everybody will be happy with. I'm sure our rivals won't really care, but we care.
Welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as usual, I'm joined by Jan Dalton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
Well, guys, what a week it's been for us in football.
Rollercoaster week.
It's been a rollercoaster week, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes.
If you're here last week, listeners, and we are sure most of you are here every week, you'll have known we spoke to something very close to our heart, which was our own non-league club that we go to see every week. And we talked about the sort of strange situation they were in with the FA last week, with them being kicked out of the FA Cup. After we recorded it, they had an appeal. Unfortunately, that appeal was unsuccessful, and they were kicked out of the FA Cup. So no matter what we said last week, guys, didn't work, did it?
No.
So they were kicked out of the Cup. Corinthian Casuals went through there. And if you are a Corinthian Casual fan and you've just joined us, well, welcome to the Sound of Football. You'll have a great time here.
Just don't smash the place up at the end.
We had some lively feedback on the social media about our podcast. And we got to thank Tim Reader for sending in that link about Santos, who were in a similar situation in the Copa Libertadores. When they checked players' eligibility, and on the official site it said it was fine, and then whoops, they come back and say, oh no, it's not fine. So there were riots because of that. Of course, Whiteley fans show a bit more decorum, and they just get very British about it and start moaning and whinging and sneering. Yeah, which is what we're good at, isn't it?
Oh, very good.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But hey, let's put all that behind us.
Mm-hmm.
Onwards and upwards. Season goes on. Whiteley won in the trophy at the weekend. Excellent, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was
cracking.
So, yeah, we put that behind us. So should you, listeners. So, yeah, don't dwell on it too much. But, hey, what are we going to talk about this week?
Well, we could talk about footballers buying football clubs.
Hey, that's a really good idea, because last month, because we're in October now, sunrise, sunset, it's really coming around quick, isn't it? But beginning of September, Ronaldo, no, not that one. We're not going to be talking about him, are we?
Not today.
No, not today.
Some other time, perhaps.
Yeah, some other time. But really, we'll leave that for other podcasts to have a chat about him, for whatever reason. Whatever reason at all. No, we're talking about the original Ronaldo. Yes. Fat one.
Ronaldo.
Fat Ronaldo.
Yeah. The real Ronaldo.
The real Ronaldo. Yeah, the one we remember.
Yeah.
Not this Johnny-come-lately one.
No.
Yeah. No, we want to talk about the real Ronaldo. Because he returns, doesn't he, Terry?
He never really went away, in truth. But he's kind of returned to active footballing without actually playing any of the actual football.
No, it's very difficult for him to actually do that now.
I reckon he would probably get into our five-a-side team if we had one.
He's considerably younger than us. He's, what, 42?
I know, he's 42. I know. Isn't that funny? I've always been older than that guy, and yet... always look at him, watch him, and I always think, hi, Dad. And he's considerably younger than me. Yeah. That's how much I look up to him. Anyway, so he's bought a 51% stake in Real Valladolid.
Yeah, and that's him buying that. It's not him part of some kind of consortium.
No,
it's not like some Far Eastern hidden hand behind it. It appears to be him. That's the way that the story is.
With his wedge.
Yeah. Now, Valladolid are not a very successful club, but they are one who's been around, knocking around the top flight for a while. I think for the 80s and 90s, I think there was only one season when they weren't in the top flight.
Hmm.
Been a bit patchy ever since.
Yeah, they've just got up this season.
Yeah.
They're newly promoted.
I suppose if you were thinking of an English equivalent, you'd be looking at something like Southampton, maybe.
Maybe something like, I don't know.
It's very difficult to make these sort of comparisons, isn't it? They're not doing that well this year. I think they're still looking for their first win.
No. After Ronaldo took over, they won two games.
Yeah.
They're now sitting comfortably in ninth.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
They beat Villarreal at the weekend.
It's all changed there, isn't it?
Well, nothing has changed, though, other than a stake in the ownership. But obviously, someone's got a rocket up their arse and decided, we better start working here.
We need to start, otherwise we're going to be out of our arses. Yeah.
Actually, La Liga it's started off really interestingly this season, isn't it?
Yes, because Real and Barca are not starting terribly well. There's talk, and it's talk. But there's talk of Mourinho to Barca. And this is talk from Barca stuff on Twitter. And Barca stuff are well-established. Barcelona Twitter fan account, very well-established. And they're also talking of Wenger for Barca. Now, obviously, it's talk. Yeah. And more so, it's Twitter talk. Nevertheless, that's the kind of talk I can get behind. So, talk of perhaps of Valverde, you know, maybe not being too long for Barcelona, despite, you know, his achievements of last season. So, yeah, interesting times in La Liga.
Now, there is another club in La Liga at the moment that is not owned by an ex-player, but certainly has interest from an ex-player in it, and that's Girona, isn't it?
My Girona.
Yeah, they're great. We're singing a different tune to the A-teams.
I can just totally step forward. Thank God.
Now that's owned by a consortium that
it's the City Group.
It is a City Group, but it is also led by Pep Guardiola's brother.
Yes. So Pep Guardiola's employer and his brother own this football club.
Yeah. So
not Pep himself.
Not
you
Pep
understand.
Himself. Pep
he has
have,
no interest. In
no,
it.
He no. has no ties to that club at all.
None at all.
None at all.
Mr. Pep lawyer.
Yes.
We're not making any insinuation about that whatsoever.
Yes. El tax inspector. do not check that out because there's nothing to see there.
El tax inspector doesn't listen to the sound of football.
I'm sure that's what they're actually
he's
called.
Got,
as
he's
well.
Got too much. He's not got enough time. He's too busy checking inspectoring the taxos. Yes. I apologize to my Spanish listeners. You'll have to get someone to translate.
That sounded fluent to me.
I was waiting for the subtitles to pop up. It really was. People will be listening to it on their fancy podcatchers and they'll be saying, translate this.
Tax inspector.
Yes. So lots of people are actually deciding that La Liga is something worth investing in, not just like the big clubs there. So maybe that we are seeing a shift in the balance of power there.
You've got, obviously, Girona, because, yes, that's happening. That's a small club that's been...
Yeah.
And I think that it's also quite easy and possibly profitable to suggest that the investment that that team have enjoyed is down to the City Group. But I think, you know, a lot of people say, look, hang on, there's still quite a lot of players from when they were knocking about in the lower league, still in that first team.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're there and are doing well on merit and deserve to be where they are.
There is talk, of course, that Girona are just being built up as a feeder club for City Group's much bigger interest.
Yeah.
Feeder clubs don't really sit well, do they? The idea of them. I mean, I'm sure clubs like the idea of them, of being able to have a club that they can develop their talent in and then just whip them out when they're good and just get rid of them if they're crap.
Yeah, I mean, if you're Manchester City, I don't think you'd have an objection at all, would you? But if you're Girona, you're going to have a massive objection. And you would if you were a fan of that club, because you're just going to see these players in transition all the time and they never really achieve anything. You know, they just get up to a certain level and then off they go. So, yeah, if you're a fan of that club, you'd feel pretty hard done by.
I think so. I mean, some people might think, but hang on, this side was a side going nowhere, and yet they're going to be getting some really good talent coming in, and they've got investment, so they're going to probably have a lot of really good talent from City coming in, but without the thought of saying, yeah, but you're now a youth team, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's the way it's going to work, isn't it? And it's, like I said, you're not going to get to see that talent hang around for any length of time, so you can actually start some kind of legacy and start, you know, building on that, because as soon as they get any good, they're going to be whipped off to the parent club and away they go, and you're left wanting.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because Christian Stuani, who you might recall made a slight intervention in the World Cup for Uruguay, is a superb player.
Yeah.
For that team, and by rights could have moved on by now from a club, you know, the size of Girona. And one assumes that perhaps one of the reasons why he hasn't moved on is because he's on decent terms. Mm-hmm. So there might be something of a trade-off in saying, well, yes, okay, you're superstar players, you know, you're young players, yeah, okay, we might hoink them out. But guys like Stuani, who's a fine player, you know, but perhaps a little bit older, a little bit more experienced, well, actually, I think he's actually still quite young, they are keeping him for perhaps longer than other clubs might well have done. So maybe if he is destined to play for Manchester City or replace Gabriel Jesus or perhaps Sergio Aguero, they're going to probably wait quite some time before that actually happens. So I don't think it necessarily quite works like that. I think it could benefit Girona somewhat. And Girona fans would say, well, we used to be a fourth division club, now we're a first division club, so sod it.
Yeah, I can live with that.
And I can, I can definitely understand that point of view.
I suppose it's less patronising as well if they're at a pretty high level. Like they're in the fourth division and they're just getting used for game time and things like that. They're actually at a high level and then we can do something with it. So it might be a little bit different, but it's interesting to see a high level club being used as a feeder club. I don't know if that exists elsewhere.
I was just wondering where we are with Watford, because Watford's obviously owned by the Pozzos, who own an Italian, is it Udinese? Do they also own a Spanish club, or did they own a Spanish club?
I think they did,
I don't remember which one it was though, sadly. And I wondered whether or not when they bought Watford, when they were in the Championship, whether or not they had ideas of maybe bumping them into the Premier League, or whether or not actually they saw them as being a nursery.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, obviously that's not how it's worked out, because Watford are in fact now an extremely good Premier League football club with a good manager and some really cracking players. So they're getting, and in fact, Premier League's a really rich league, the richest in the world. So if anything, in the pecking order, you'd think they'd be the top of the tree. And maybe it would be Udinese that would be feeding their club. It doesn't seem to be quite working out like that. But I think there was a degree of... Because that was the club that played the loan system when they were in the Championship.
Yes,
and they took some stick for it. Because Palace were down there as well. And they took some stick for people saw them manipulating the loan system with Udinese and other clubs as well.
I think maybe we're going on to feeder clubs here when we were talking about club ownership. Now, the thing is, in the old days, footballers would do the decent thing when they retired, and they'd go and buy a sweet shop or a pub, wouldn't they?
Betting shop.
That's what they would do.
Open a boozer.
Yeah, exactly. A business that was well within their means. But of course, now footballers are so rich now, they can actually buy their own football clubs.
Yes.
Some might think small. Actually, what I'll do is I'll buy 10% of a football club with all my mates. I'll have a little stake in that. We'll go in, we'll have some Far Eastern businessman come in, he'll buy half the club, and the other half, me and four of my mates, will all buy, we'll have 10% each.
I wonder what you could be talking about.
Well, could I be talking about Salford City?
I think you could.
Yes, I could be. Now, here's a club that was a low-level, non-league club, and now has had three promotions in four seasons since being taken over.
That's right.
And that's a pretty much a success story, isn't it?
It is. They're in the National League now. Yeah. They're knocking on the door of the Football League, which was the stated aim of the original five, now six, including their Singaporean majority shareholder. So, yeah, they've done very well, and they're achieving on their aim.
The five people involved are the Neville brothers, Nicky Butt, Scalzi, and Giggsy.
Yes.
Is Giggsy involved as well?
Giggsy is involved. It's largely financially doped, yes. Okay, but they're not the only team that have shot up through the non-league system there, because a wealthy benefactor has decided, hey, I like the look of this and I want a bit of this non-league action. Crawley did it, Fleetwood done it. These are teams that have done well with a little bit of investment and created football clubs there, created league football clubs. And Salford looked like to be doing the same thing.
I think what's the difference there is that, well, certainly one of the, I think the good things about what they've done in Salford is they're giving back to the community that they're from. I'm not saying that they're not doing it, they may hopefully make a pretty penny in the future, but I mean, I think up to now, I think that's been a money pit for them and the majority shareholder as well. Peter Lim, he probably isn't going to miss the amount of money he's investing in that, to be fair to him, he's got plenty of it. But it's nice to see that it's not just an investment opportunity for those guys, for the former pros, I mean. They're giving back to an area that they're from, and I mean, I tried to catch some of the documentary. There's some animosity from the existing supporters about the changeover. And I suppose it's right. I mean, if you're used to going along to a club of that stature, when you could go along to Old Trafford if you wanted to, you could go along to Manchester City if you wanted to, but you choose to go along to a non-league club with all of the problems that brings along and all of the things you have to put up with, and then it gets this sudden injection and with a stated aim to get into the Football League.
Yeah.
You can see why some people would go, well, that's not what I signed up to, but, you know, in the end, you know, the guys paid what they paid and it's theirs to do with as they wish, really.
Yeah, when we would have reformed, they were reformed with the express intention of trying to get back to where they were originally.
Yes.
And they've almost done it, haven't they, really?
Yeah, they're getting there.
Yeah, considering where they were when they moved to
Imagine when they moved to the new stadium, the old Greyhound stadium.
Yeah, there is always going to be the perception that for the way that they're owned and run, that it's going to be difficult for them to make a push forward when other clubs are having large-scale investment that is created from external means.
At some point, they're going to require external investment.
Yeah.
Like Sam Hammam did when he helped to bankroll their ascendancy when they were the old Wimbledon. Every club has some kind of external investment.
Yeah, it is very difficult to imagine a world in which that could not happen in this day and age.
Interesting to see it happen, but yeah.
Yeah. When clubs do this, it's because there is an injection and there is a way that people have changed the club, so to speak. So they have changed it. And yes, you could see it as a bunch of rich guys getting together and having fun owning their own football club. And yes, if you're a sport with that football club and if you've turned up and if your money through the turnstile was that club's lifeblood, you can feel a bit of attachment to it. But of course, now they're just there as, well, they can see themselves as just being there as part of the scenery.
Hmm. They have been helped by the broadcast media.
Oh, yes.
Because they did that deal with
The BBC company. Sport is actually BBC, based in Salford.
Yeah, and also covers their games.
Yeah.
And obviously pays them handsomely for it.
Yeah.
Which is what grinds the teeth of other non-league club fans. It's like,
especially when the FA Cup comes around.
You're making this out like it's some kind of romantic journey when this is, you know, by some margin, in some respects, they have a better payroll than some of the league clubs that they could be playing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Adam Rooney is signed from Aberdeen for £5,000 a week. I mean, I'm sorry, but that's just wrong.
Yeah.
That is wrong. That is financial doping.
Yeah.
And then the BBC come along and give them even more money.
Yeah.
You know, and then still make it out like it's some kind of sort of like fairy story. It's not. It's just a story of a club that's being paid lots and lots of money, some of it from our TV licence.
Yes. Yeah.
And that is annoying.
Yes.
Sorry. That was a bit of a rant, actually.
No, it's fine. But, usually at the lower ends of the FA Cup, they're picking out players and saying, oh, well, he's a postman, he's a plumber.
Mm. Yeah, he's a professional footballer.
Yeah, he's a professional footballer. So's he.
All of these people here, they get paid, they work full-time as professional footballers.
Yes.
No candlestick makers here. No butchers.
When they first took over the club, though, there were players that dropped down from the professional leagues to play for them just because they'd get a chance to play with the class of 92, play under, if you like, or work with those guys.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely there is some financial doping, which is a new phrase, which I love. I heard that before tonight. There is some of that. But again, as well as that, because of the background of the ownership, I think that there is a draw there for quality players as well to go there and learn from some world-class players as well.
And money.
Yeah.
I think...
There's a combination
of both.
I mean, £5,000 a week is what Sunderland are now. That's like kind of budget now to pay for League One players. So that's a considerable amount of money to buy some very, very high quality players.
Well, I mean, and that's Sunderland. Big football club.
Yeah, I know. My point.
Massive stadium.
Yeah. Another non-league side in the same area that has been on this upward course as well, their one has actually stuttered a bit now, they're finding their own level, of course, FC United of Manchester, which obviously has not official links with the club, but obviously with the following is made up of fans or disgruntled fans of Manchester United.
I wonder what they must think of the whole caper. They must have opinions on it.
Oh, I bet.
I'm sure they have.
I bet on the FCOM forum, there is a whole sub forum.
I think so,
all about Salford City.
Yes.
And I bet it's full of those zingiest zings in footballdom.
Yeah, it is. I'm sure you're right. FC United Manchester obviously are supporter-owned. I mean, 100% supporter-owned. Mm-hmm. And I suppose they must think that actually maybe there have been people who have gone to Salford City who could actually have been FC United of Manchester supporters.
Mm.
Yeah. Maybe there might even be some who were FC United of Manchester supporters and have decided, well, hang on a second, this way I don't get to support Manchester United, the other Manchester United, but I might see my team back in the league, which would be quite cool. By contrast, FC United of Manchester, we did a podcast about them, maybe a couple of seasons ago, about them on BT Sport and about how they protest about the rearrangement of their FA Cup fixture to, I think it was a Monday night. And obviously, this is not something that Salford City are going to have any qualms about at all.
Not at all.
They will happily play football wherever the TV company tells them to, because they live in the modern capitalist world and they're comfortable in that environment. And FC United of Manchester are not comfortable in that environment. And perhaps that's what we're beginning to see now, where they, as you say, I mean, I think Graham's right. I think they've found their level, haven't they?
Yeah.
At least for the time being.
For the time being, yeah.
Where are they at in the league structure?
Conference North, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which is pretty damn high.
Yeah.
They've got their own stadium. And as long as they're paying their bills and they're paying their players and everything's cool, then what's the problem? I mean, you know, be happy in the skin you're in.
They're in the same division as Stockport County.
Bloody hell.
So that is pretty high.
Bloody hell. Stockport County. I didn't realise. Of course, because they went through that dreadful...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stockport and Torquay are both at...
just a tragedy.
Step two.
I can't cope with that. I can't cope with Stockport.
Yeah.
Being in that level.
Yeah, well, we remember when they were...
When they were in the second tier.
Yeah.
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 Andy Kilner. Angel. Ubery Angel.
Mm.
That was a team, actually.
Yeah.
That was a team.
But there you see how what life is like with the pyramid structure now, with the promotion and relegation.
This is the reality of it, isn't it?
This is the reality. If you want, if a team does very badly, if it doesn't go out of business, it can still plummet all the way down.
Or if it gets bought by an unscrupulous owner who doesn't pay his bills.
Yeah.
And then,
Or if you've got a club whose owner decides to build a huge white elephant stadium outside of town.
Yes.
That could also
Darlington, for example, end up having to change your name and effectively restart your club.
And this is all what happens in non-league by unscrupulous owners. I suppose now, with the fact that footballers owning clubs, at least they are more in the spotlight. You know where their money's coming from, I suppose.
Mm.
You may not know all the people they do business with, but it does give a veneer of respectability, I suppose, to a football club.
And accountability as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, as you say, yeah.
Well, does it? I mean, they're just as capable of dealing with shady people as anyone else.
Yeah, and footballers are just as capable of being just generally shady.
Yeah.
As we know.
Yeah.
And indeed ex-footballers.
Yes, exactly. Dennis Wise is a very good friend of Mike Ashley.
Dennis Wise is indeed a very good friend of Mike Ashley. And, David Beckham, you know, drives cars.
Sometimes he's in a real hurry as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. But he has expensive lawyers.
If you want to drive fast cars, get expensive lawyers.
Yes, indeed. Because you're going to need them.
Now, of course, D-Bex has also joined a trend. I mean, he would probably say he started this back in 2007.
Yeah, he might do, I suppose, yeah.
Which is where the seed of this whole thing was born.
It exactly was. When he signed for LA Galaxy, in the future, he could buy an MLS franchise at a substantial discount. And that's exactly what he's done.
Mm. Yeah, so him and Simon Fuller, his longtime manager, the Spice Girls manager himself, mm-hmm. Have now got a football club. They've got Inter Miami. Yep, Shazam that, go on. Yeah, Inter Miami.
Mm.
But they're not actually a club yet, though, are they?
They are. On their badge it says 2020, so that's when they're going to be a club. They've got a badge.
That's a start, isn't it?
And it's got a lovely bit of football hubris in there as well.
Go on.
Part of the design is a rising sun, and the sun has 7 points coming out of it.
That is hubristic.
Yeah?
Oh, they're doomed to failure, aren't they?
That is evil.
Oh yeah, I'm sure if you look at it closely, there's probably lots of different angles and things. You could do a whole Da Vinci Code on there, I think.
Yeah, I feel like the American $1 bill.
Yes.
There's miles of conspiracy in that.
Yeah. Next to FC United of Manchester sub-thread on Salford City, there's another one on David Beckham's design for his club's badge. Yeah, we all know what's... Yeah.
You seem to be portraying FC United fans as having a kind of Fortean bent. Are you suggesting that, you know, that subscriptions to the Fortean Times are quite high in that part of Manchester?
I think maybe that they see things that we perhaps can't.
They've got more open minds.
Yes.
More open minds.
Open minds. Yeah, I think that's probably what I'm saying. Yeah. So he's got this club. Are we going to get to the stage where everyone's going to have the club?
We've had Steven Gerrard and Frank Lampard
go
into management.
Yeah.
And these are two very, very high-profile guys, you know, and obviously sticking with the same meme of not being able to manage in the same countries, you know, together. Yeah. One's gone to Scotland and one stayed down south in England. If those guys, I guess, were, you know, entrepreneurs, they might well have thought, well, actually, this is an area we're going to go into. But you know, you get the impression, I mean, I don't know whether they have interests, business interests. It might well be that they do. but that's not the same thing as being, if you like, entrepreneurs or businessmen.
Yeah.
Now, Beckham, you know, is a businessman. Ronaldo is a businessman. He owns a sports marketing company with Anderson da Silva, Brazilian MMA fighter. And he's got football academies and stuff like that, as indeed has Dybeck. So this guy, you know, he's not just like, not like in a Bobby Moore kind of way, where he sold his name to these academies and...
No,
you know,
in a Terry Venables way, where he's making wigs.
Well, I mean, there's nothing wrong with making wigs, mate. There's nothing wrong with it. I wouldn't know that personally.
As I get older, I'm starting to think...
I wasn't trying to say anything. But I mean, let's not really... You know, we don't want to go into this. None of us are going to come out of this well. so let's face it. You know, these guys are proper businessmen, whereas obviously guys like Lamps and Gerrard, had they gone into that area while they were still playing, maybe that's what could easily happen. So I think we will actually see, you know, more managers or more players coming to the end of their careers. And yeah, the ones who have said, right, I'm going to diversify into different areas now, I'm going to do something different, and think, well, I'm not going to go into football management or football coaching, I'm going to go into club ownership.
Mm.
So I'm either going to take over a club myself, or I'm going to form a consortium. I mean, you know, you could see, I don't know, I mean, I could see in 20 years from now, I could see Wolf Zaha buying, you know, a substantial stake in Crystal Palace.
Yeah.
If he stays there to the end of his career and he's an entrepreneur, he's got his own brand, this is assuming he succeeds. If he becomes everything that he wants to be, a multi-millionaire, hugely successful, a rich man at that age, then maybe he will. I mean, Rio Ferdinand mostly broadcasts, but he does other things as well. He's got, I mean, he's mostly in the music industry and entertainment industry.
He has a clothing line with Sports Direct. Yeah. That doesn't stop him from criticising Newcastle United.
I sincerely hope you're not questioning the objectivity of Rio Ferdinand.
I would never.
No, neither would I, frankly. No. I don't think any of us need to, do we? No.
No,
absolutely.
I think the difference is that when you look at David Beckham, or Dybeck, because I also like that as well. Something else I've learned tonight, Dybeck, which is good, yeah. Mm. So Dybeck and Ronaldo, not that one, the other one, have got so much money. They were outliers in their time because they were so well paid. I mean, there were others that were close to them, but they stood right out there, didn't they? But these days, you know, your average football that's playing for a top six side is earning probably £1 million a month.
Yeah.
So they're absolutely coining it in. At the end of a 10, 15-year career, they're going to walk away with a hell of a lot of money. That's a lot of players with a lot of money.
They should do anyway.
Well, they're supposed to anyway. Alarmingly, some of them don't do that.
But the point is that these guys can finish their career and be multi-millionaire, have hundreds of millions of pounds just sloshing around that is more than enough to go and buy fully functioning.
Yeah, they can waste a load of it on the club and not really feel a thing.
Yeah, and that's what's interesting, because you know, we started talking about this conversation. There are traditional things that players would go into in the old days. It was, as we said, bars and things like that. And these days, with the example that Terry just gave of Gerrard and Lampard, you know, going into coaching, we're going to see a time where they're going to just skip that level and go, well, I'm going to stay in football, but I'm just going to use my considerable wealth to be involved in football and actually not be involved in coaching and managing and doing that kind of thing, which is kind of where you'd think they'd want to go. Hmm. The money is such a draw there for them to go and do something big, and maybe win big.
Yeah,
you know, to be fair to them.
Also, as well, is that management is, it's not for everyone, and it can decimate a reputation, can't it? If you go in there and make a complete pig's ear of it.
And I think in a lot of cases, players go into coaching and managing because they don't know anything else.
Yeah.
They don't have any other qualifications, and maybe they haven't earned enough money to retire, and they have to stay, and they have to stay in the game, and they say, oh, I am staying, it's because it's what I love, it's all.
Yeah.
But maybe it's kind of like all you know, which isn't really the same as what you love.
Yeah.
You know, and so you end up staying in that, you know, and sometimes you do a really, really good job, but actually more often than not, you know, people don't.
Yeah.
And I mean, you'll see increasingly players going, not faced with that, they can go, I can choose to go into coaching because it's what I want to do rather than what I have to do. And I mean, this is why I'm optimistic for Lampard and Gerrard. I mean, these guys really, they can sit in a comfy chair in a TV studio in Stratford or in Isleworth for the rest of their lives if they want to, drawing a decent whack of money and living off their fortune.
Yeah.
Quite happily. But they've chosen to go into management. Yeah. I mean, they're barmy, frankly, but that's what they've chosen to do.
But that's what keeps the wheels turning, isn't it? Football would potentially suffocate or eat itself if everyone just went off and were pundits. Mm. You know, it's great to see what they're doing. And yeah. You know, they may be massively successful, they may not be. I mean, you look at someone like Roy Keane. You know, he's one of the most famous footballers of his time, an incredibly gifted individual, and went into management and kind of, you know, had a bit of a good turn with Sunderland, but then it's kind of just died out. His stock's well down now. So, yeah, if he was around now, he'd be earning, you know, what Sanchez is earning at Manchester United, and, you know, he'd be, you know, be on fortune. He could finish his time in football and go off and buy a club if he wanted to, or maybe just, you know,
or just buy an island and sit.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember about 20 years ago when Gary Lineker went straight into media straight after retiring, and it was a few other people followed suit, I think, or near enough at the same time, where people were just saying, "Oh, I'm going to go into media." People like Alan Smith, Jamie Redknapp. And there was a small undercurrent in the press saying, well, is this what's going to happen to the best people now? Are they not going to go into management? Is it just going to be the ones who were just had mediocre careers now who are going to be the ones to go into management?
Mm.
Whereas everyone else goes into the media. And I suppose what you've got here is a different type of progression.
Yeah.
That sort of thing has always happened, though, isn't it? Certain players have gone into media, and even players have gone into well, not club ownership, but club administration. So Jimmy Hill was the chairman of Coventry for a long time, wasn't he? So he was someone who went into more about the development of clubs. And, well, what he did at Coventry, some people might say, well, he was basically the architect of modern football there, horribly
stadium.
And I suppose you're always going to have people, there's always going to be a need for ex-pros turning up in the media. But I suppose now, because they've got so many advisors and managers and brand consultants, these people, they reinvest their money, they make more money, like the huge amounts of money they've already got. Mm. They're brands, aren't they now, these people? So it's no wonder that they get to the end of their career, or the next crop of players as well, which are going to be even more rich, even more brand savvy. And as you say, with Will Sahar, they're entrepreneurs themselves, or they have to be, because they're on to keep on top of everything what they're doing. This is why they make decisions with their heads rather than with their hearts sometimes.
Mm. Yeah. And I mean, we could see that. And it's interesting because there's this perception about management that you have to have played the game in order to be a good coach, to be a good manager. Yeah. Of course, there's loads of players out there.
Oh, yeah.
And most of them don't. We're only talking about a handful of players in each generation. We're not talking necessarily about all the players. But that idea or that conception that only the best coaches can be managers, you know, it lends itself to the idea that the better the player, the better the coach. Yeah. And we know that you just got excited. Roy Keane is a perfect example of how that is definitely not always the case. Yeah. But if you have that drop-off at the very, very top of the game of these guys, Leo Messi, will he go into management and coaching? You have to wonder whether or not that's something that he will do.
Yeah.
If he does, it'll presumably only be with Barcelona.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to imagine him, you know, turning out one day and handing out the cones.
Mm.
You know, that's not going to be. And but that's
he'd do it really well.
I'm sure he'd be a fucking amazing actor. But I mean, that's the traditional route that coaches take. They go through that thing, and you can't see that happening with him. And you do wonder whether or not that would result. If that theory is true, then are we looking at a potential brain drain of our very best potential coaches thinking, well, actually, I'm not going to be a coach. Mm. I'm going to be an owner, or I'm just going to go and do something. I'm just going to go and count my money.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Zidane's a good example, in fairness. He did it. He's done it.
I don't think there is a way that you can predict who's going to be a good manager and who isn't. I think people who have played for Ferguson are often tipped as going into management because they learned under Ferguson. But how many successful managers are there who played any meaningful amount of their career under Ferguson?
Well,
how many?
I mean, as of last weekend, none. Maybe as of 3 months ago, I'd say maybe Steve Bruce.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think he's on his uppers. Mark Hughes, Patchy.
Yeah.
Robinson's doing all right at Coventry.
He's doing all right at Coventry.
He's been on the scene for a long while now, Robbins, in fairness.
And putting in the work, a lot of work down at that level. But, you know, this is, considering the number of players who played under Ferguson, there's not a huge amount of talent that has come out of it. And I think that's what the point is the fact that just because you worked under a great manager doesn't mean you're going to become a great manager.
Yeah.
And if you're a good player, it doesn't mean you're going to be a good player.
A good coach. No. I mean, you've got to start by... Well, you have to have an aptitude for it.
Yeah.
And, of course, you've got to go through and do your badges.
I wonder as well if they're going to see more managers like Brendan Rodgers, for instance, someone who had to give up their career very early and stay and not earn all the money that people would have done had he gone through his whole career. I mean, we don't know how successful his career would have been.
Yeah, but I suppose he had a head start on other managers, didn't he? Because he had all that time to get his badges and get some experience while they were still playing. Great. But I think when you talk about what was really interesting, about Terry was saying about Messi there, being a manager. One, you're right. There's only one club he's going to be associated with, which would probably be the worst thing he could ever do if he was going to be a manager.
Yeah.
But when you've been an absolute megastar like that, I mean, what else can you do? Would you want to go in management and ruin that? I mean, whenever you see a manager go to a club where he was an absolute superstar, it very rarely ends well.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I know there's a different kettle of fish, but you look at Keegan went to Newcastle, did really well in his first spell, decided to go back again, and you could argue that took a bit of the sheen off his time there. He was very successful as a player, had a good shot as a manager, and I just, you know... You got to that level of popularity, and it was certainly with someone like Messi. I mean, he's a megastar. I mean, people recognise him outside of his own sport.
Mm.
People recognise him just for, you know, who he is. The same with Ronaldo. And you imagine those two in opposite technical areas in a game of football. I mean, it'd be very interesting to watch.
Yeah.
But I can't see that they would. It was almost like a step down for them. I just can't see that. And there's a temperament there as well, isn't there? I think that you probably need to be a bit more. I'm not taking away from those two individuals. They're very, very talented players. But if you look at someone like Steven Gerrard or Frank Lampard, their feet are a little bit closer to the ground, you might say. You know, they're the type of player you feel like you've got some kind of connection with because they seem fairly normal, don't they? I mean, they're so far away from you. You see them on the pitch, and they look like amazing and the crazy things they can do. But the reality is, they feel quite normal, don't they?
Yeah.
Someone like Ronaldo, you got anything in common with that guy? No. Yeah, well, you have, Graham, to be fair.
How dare you? How dare you? My lawyers will be around you.
Sorry.
Interesting you're mentioning Kevin Keegan there, because that's a guy who pretty much did everything. If he was having his playing career, or his playing career was just finishing now, I wonder where he would go right now. Because when he was playing, he was making records, he was in adverts, he was appearing on Morecambe and Wise or whatever, and he was everywhere, wasn't he?
Mm. It's entirely conceivable that he would be, super rich. And maybe he'd be buying Newcastle. He'd be part of that Peter Kenyon consortium that we hear about.
There's nothing to say that Keegan isn't part of that.
And there's nothing to say that Keegan isn't
part of
that. I mean,
actually, before that news broke, interestingly, Keegan was in the press last week, wasn't he saying it was the worst run club he'd ever encountered?
That's very interesting.
And then a few years later, Peter Kenyon's interested in buying them.
Peter Kenyon, eh? Well, that's quite interesting because Man United are playing Newcastle this weekend.
Are they really?
Yeah, they are.
Good grief.
They play them on Saturday evening. Is that going to be in the box set, though, Terry? Or is Bayern versus Gladbach going to be there instead?
See, now I was right about the Bundesliga game last week.
Yes.
I don't know. I mean, like, we're doing it together, so we can have a fight over it. I mean, Bayern versus Gladbach, I mean, that's an old-fashioned ding-dong game.
That's old-school 70s German football.
It's a proper 70s classicer.
Yeah.
No question about it. And Bayern Munich, of course, lost last weekend. They lost 2-0 to Hertha Berlin. So there is, and but then Oktoberfest, I think, is over now. So they usually, and you usually do stumble at Oktoberfest. So, you know.
Oktoberfest is over now because it's now October.
Yes.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
There's lots of other fixtures as well this weekend, including Liverpool Man City, which should be the game, shouldn't it? Yeah,
that is mouthwatering. Yeah, that would be a cracker.
Yeah,
definitely watching that one.
That one's on Sunday afternoon. And if you want to see what we've picked for our matches this week, get along to tinyletter.com/soundoffootball. But that's all we've got time for this week. If you've heard anything about player ownership or anything about what players do after they've stopped playing, then let us know on social media. Get in touch with us, have a chat with us, or leave some stuff up on our Facebook page. But from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry Bilton, it's goodbye.
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 You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter at Sound of Football, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
I think it's difficult to imagine Lionel Messi getting into a fist fight over Phil Collins. I think I'm almost certain that that's not something that would happen.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I don't see that.
No, but I mean, I can relate to anyone who does get into a fist fight over Phil Collins, don't get me wrong. You know.
What are you talking about?
You know, I took Stephen Gerrard and his court case.
He got a bit fighty.
He got fighty in a nightclub over Phil Collins was the music for which they
were. Really? I didn't know what was playing at the time.
I don't think it was. I think the point is that that's what Stevie G wanted. Yeah. Hey, this may need to be cleaned up. There might need to be some posts involved in this particular segment. Yeah.